My name's Sean Collier. I'm outside the AMC Lowe's Waterfront 22 in West Homestead, Pennsylvania, where I will be flying solo today as we approach the Christmas movie season in the heart of award season. And yet here I am talking to my damn self about Thor fighting whales. But stick around anyway. I will confirm that you do not need to go see In the Heart of the Sea, and I will tell you some things that you probably should be going to see or watch at home this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, the 11th of December, 2015. My name's Sean Collier. I am alone. It is the rare, long, lonely drive episode of You Can't Handle the Truth. I can't tell you the last one we did. It may have been for 50 Shades of Grey, which was supposed to be an episode with both me and Aaron Kleiber. Of course, he had a baby. He was alerted to the imminent arrival of the baby now known as Abby Kleiber. During the screening of 50 Shades of Grey, so I was forced to fly solo. I'm going to stop saying fly solo on that particular episode. Other than a couple of bonus episodes we've done this year, this might be the last time I was by myself. But here I am, and thank you for joining me. I do appreciate it. We are not in the Honda Civic. The Honda Civic was party to an unfortunate error on my part, wherein I rudely rear-ended another vehicle in the Liberty Tunnel, causing much more extensive damage than the apparent severity of the accident initially indicated. I have been in a 2016 Ford Fusion, courtesy of the insurance company, for it's going on 3 weeks now. I believe that I will return to the Honda Civic tomorrow. That was the last estimate. But for tonight, we are in the beautiful 2016 Ford Fusion. We would take an auto sponsorship, and I can recommend the vehicle highly. Has been quite nice. This is the thick of awards season for me. I know that most people don't really pick up on it until about the time of the Golden Globes in mid-January. My nominations for the Critics' Choice Awards, which again I urge you to watch, are due this Friday. So I have been frantically watching as many films as possible over the past couple of weeks, as I always do in the last few weeks of November and first few weeks of December. And a little later on in an abbreviated extra butter, I'll make some recommendations for those. So please stick around. There are certainly some films that I highly recommend that we will talk about in a bit. But to the matter at hand. You may have seen some advertisements, I'm sure you have, for the film In the Heart of the Sea, a whaling adventure directed by Ron Howard, starring Chris Hemsworth, Cillian Murphy, and others. Brendan Gleeson, very talented Brendan Gleeson. And in at least the full previews, I'm not sure about the TV spots, the full previews invoke the name Moby Dick to reference what In the Heart of the Sea is about. In the Heart of the Sea is not, strictly speaking, an adaptation of Moby Dick. It is the story of the whaling ship Essex, which was one of a true story of a disaster at sea involving an angry sperm whale. It occurred in 1820, I believe. And it was that made up some of the source material for Herman Melville's novel. So this is not Moby Dick. This is the story that partially inspired Moby Dick. In other words, yes, I just sat through Moby Dick's origin story. And if you listen to the show, you know how I feel about origin stories. Not a fan, generally speaking. Overdone, overplayed, rarely interesting. This is the origin story of a fictional whale. That's how I spent my Monday night. I got a lot of screeners to watch. I got them right here in the car with me. There's a DVD of Concussion over there. Haven't seen that yet. DVD of Trumbo. I'd really enjoy the opportunity to watch that. A good number of great, or I hope to be great, documentaries, foreign language entries, other things I need to catch up on, like The End of the Tour with Jason Segel. I would like to watch a lot of those movies, and instead, a goddamn whale's backstory is how I spent the Monday night before nominations were due. Not to skip to the end, but I will not be including In the Heart of the Sea on my ballot in any conceivable location. Were there a category, best aquatic mammal, I'd probably come up with something else to mention. That said, okay. So, first of all, who the hell is this movie for? I understand not doing a straight adaptation of Moby Dick. The audience for that, particularly, a big-budget American epic of Moby Dick would be virtually non-existent in 2015. I understand why you don't want to do that. However, at the very least, one suspects that a new adaptation of Moby Dick probably would have been a more interesting film, because Moby Dick is a... I haven't read it. Sorry. Has Sean read it? No. It's a masterpiece of American literature. So I presume, from my limited experience, probably a pretty good story. That's probably safe to say. And probably a better structured and more interesting tale than the partial real-life source material, which is not a particularly compelling story. Sunk further by a frame story wherein Herman Melville himself, played by some guy, I don't know, I probably should have recognized him or at least noted his name, Herman Melville travels to meet an aged survivor of the Essex disaster. That would be the character played by Brendan Gleeson. And I'm always happy to see Brendan Gleeson perform. He's incredibly talented. But because the story is so flimsy and choppy and uneven and dreadfully structured, through no fault of whoever the screenwriter was, it's just real life, so it's messy, they slap this bad frame story on it, where Melville is trying to wring the details out of Brendan Gleeson's character. Not interesting, just serves to push it from, you know, perhaps a more tolerable hour 40 to a really slow, you're going to want to go get some Reese's Pieces in the middle of the second act like I did, 2 hours and 5 minutes. So that's a problem. Chris Hemsworth is a problem. I'm sorry. He's a good Thor. He's not really a good actor. Better than his brother, I'll tell you that. But I don't believe that Chris Hemsworth is a good actor. I don't think he's that good in comedy. I might be judging that harshly, because the only comedy I can think of him doing right now is Vacation, the Vacation remake from this year. That could have been the script, but I really don't trust Chris Hemsworth to do much, and he can't really carry this movie, and none of the supporting characters are quite compelling enough to make up that deficit. It's Ron Howard is directing. He knows what he's doing. It's certainly directed well enough. It is shot well enough. The whales, I don't know. It's very CGI. Yeah, I didn't feel like I was seeing whales. I felt like I was seeing, you know, computer monsters. And I do think that was partially in the way they were shot. They were kind of shot as these... You never really saw much of a whole whale. You saw just like a hulking mass of whale elements. And I get why. That was to give a sense of scale and a sense of size and the inhuman nature of these beasts. But that was not very convincing. Nor was the central trope. Now, I haven't seen that one Jaws movie where Jaws the Fourth or whatever stalks the Brody family around the Western Hemisphere. I haven't seen that one. But it sounds pretty dumb. And that's pretty much what's going on here. A lot of stuff happens. It's well into the second hour before our doomed vessel encounters the white whale. But when they do, spoilers? I don't know. They sail 2,000 miles into the Pacific because they're told there's a great deal of whales. They've been having trouble finding the whales. And somebody tells them, yo, bunch of whales out there. There's one that might kill you. And they're like, yeah, sure, whales. And they go after them. And, you know, they get there. They're trying to get their first whale. And Moby Dick, or whatever we're calling this particular beast, attacks the ship, nearly destroys it. Fine, okay, I getcha. But then the whale proceeds to stalk them. It's a stalker whale. Beneath the waves of the Pacific, an aquatic mammalian Jason Voorhees chases Thor and company to the far reaches of the great ocean. And I don't just mean he hangs around, because, again, minor spoilers, I suppose, about the first thing that happens is, they get on their lifeboats, get the survivors onto the lifeboats, begin looking for land. They're at sea for, I believe it's something like 34 days. 34 days in these lifeboats. And then they see an island. They're like, oh, hey, there's an island over there. That's great. Let's go. No sooner do they spot the island that the whale, aha, now is my moment to strike. Now the whale comes back for more. It was just calmly... What do? Float? Swim? It was calmly... Yeah, they swim. They're whales. It was calmly swimming along, just out of sight, until the moment where it sensed from the depths of Neptune's terrain... Terrain refers to land. That's bad writing. That... Hope had returned to these humans, and only then did the whale decide to dash that hope. This is fucking dumb, is what this is. And speaking of dumb, you know, here's a counterpoint. One of the other movies in my kind of constant marathon that I got going on right now, earlier this morning, as I'm recording this, I saw Joy, the David O. Russell film, starring Jennifer Lawrence. That's also a true story. And I cannot review Joy yet. I am not allowed to comment on Joy until Christmas Day. But I will break that slightly. Not like we accidentally released an episode we weren't allowed to talk about a month early last week. Anybody who may have caught that particular error, enjoy the illegal early review. I'm going to break the embargo only to say this. Only to say that the story of the film Joy is not inherently interesting. I forget her last name right now, but that's based on a real person who was a supporting multiple generations of her family, young woman with children, an ex-husband. Her parents weren't doing too well, and she invented a self-ringing mop, the first self-ringing mop, and went into business and marketed it. Good for her, not an inherently interesting story. It is made interesting, frankly, because of Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence sells this character so well. And I've talked about how talented I think she is before. She sells this character so well that it doesn't matter that we're talking about the patent on a special mop. You're just interested in it because she connects you to the character. And here in the Heart of the Sea, is that even the name of this movie? I've kind of forgotten already. In this film, it's the exact opposite. They know that Chris Hemsworth cannot forge an emotional connection between the audience and the character in this case. So despite the fact that the subject matter here, unlike Joy, is inherently interesting. A nautical disaster, a whale attack. These are inherently interesting concepts. But they don't know how to make them interesting here. So they saddle the Chris Hemsworth character with every form of cheap hope for connection they possibly can. He's got a wife and they want to have a kid and she's pregnant and he's got to come home to meet his child and he promises her he will return safe. Oh, and he's an orphan and he needs to prove to the people of Nantucket, them with their nectars and all, that he is worthy of being on the sea, even though his father was a farmer who went to jail. He's got daddy issues. He's becoming a daddy to parallel those daddy issues. He has a problem with authority. The captain is a silver spoon type. It's all of this. It's not even screenwriting 101, because they would steer you away from this shit in screenwriting 101. It's all of this cheap, you know, Walker Texas Ranger level attempts to desperately plead that you somehow become interested in this movie because they know they can't make you interested in the whale attack thing. How could it's? But it's not a terrible film. It's really not. It's not a good film. But it's directed well enough. It is an entertainment for stretches. There's boat action. You like some boat action? Well, we got plenty of that for you. I'm going to skip ahead and get to extra butter in a minute here. This is not going to be a particularly long episode, as you may have figured. But right now, especially, when you are already making your plans to see Star Wars next week, when there are a great many awards contenders in theaters near you already, coming to theaters near you, some on Netflix already, which we'll get to in a little bit. When there is so much good to watch right now and so much more coming, dare not waste $10 to $12 of your hard-earned money on a ticket to In the Heart of the Sea. There's just no compelling reason. Maybe if your grandfather was a sailor, that'd be about it. If you really like sweaters, I don't. Anyway, we'll be right back. I want to give some brief words from our sponsors. We are sponsored, as always, by Puzzle Packs. It is still the holiday shopping season, and you know what else it is? It's the holiday beer season. This is when you go and get your Christmas beers. What is a Christmas beer, you may ask? I understand that summer beer means citrusy, and that pumpkin beer means cinnamony. But hey, what is a Christmas beer? I don't really know. As far as I can determine, it's usually a stout with a vaguely nutty element. But you can find out, because you're going to go to your favorite local bottle shop that allows you to mix your own six-packs. You're going to go out there, and you're going to get yourself six different Christmas ales, and you're going to go to a party and have a little tasting. Everybody's going to have a good time, but you are not going to walk into that party hanging on to a flimsy, wet, papery six-pack container. You are going to walk in with your puzzle packs, with your customized wooden six-pack carrier, with the bottle opener built into it. Veteran-owned, sustainable, locally manufactured Pittsburgh company puzzle packs. Get it for yourself for your holiday beer tasting purposes. Get it for others for a gift. Go to puzzlepacks.com. That's PUZZLEPAX.com. We are also sponsored by Goods and Evil. Head to goodsandevil.com. Again, you are looking for gifts for the movie fan on your list, for the pop culture aficionado, for the vegan, a great line of vegan shirts at goodsandevil.com. They have always been so nice to Aaron and myself. They have always sent us a bunch of shirts. If you go back and watch Aaron's Watch It For You series, which I still highly recommend, those are not timely. Those are great videos that Aaron has done on some of your favorite movies. Aaron is always wearing a Goods and Evil shirt in those. You can see some of them in action, and you can get some for everyone on your list at goodsandevil.com. We will be right back. I have some quick recommendations for you after this word from the Epicast. What am I talking about? After this word from the Epicast Network.
Hey, yo, I'm Ed Bailey. I'm here with
Dave Bracey,
and we are the Drinking Partners Podcast on Epicast Network. Fucked it up. Make sure you check us out, man. We got the Comedy Fuel, which is really supposed to be beer fueled comedy podcast, but
Craft Fuel Beer Potter. Craft Beer Fuel Pot. Motherfucker. All right. Man. I'm gonna have to write that down.
Craft Beer Fuel Podcast. Okay. Craft Brew Fuel. Craft Beer Fuel Comedy. Those are not four words that you say normally. All right. Craft Brew, you knew that I was going to fuck up. You knew. Craft Beer Fuel Comedy Podcast. All right, so Craft Beer Fuel Comedy Podcast on.
You can find us on epicastnetwork.com/partnerspod. You can find us at partnerspod on Facebook, Twitter, and IG. And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Libsyn under Drinking Partners.
Yo, if you ain't heard and if you don't know, Drinking Partners is the crew. Epicast is the family. Make sure you check us out, man.
And we're back. Thank you again for listening. I do always appreciate when people listen to the solo episodes. Again, I haven't done too many of them in 2015, but I left to my own devices. I'm usually talking to myself about movies anyway. So anyone who is willing to listen in on that, I truly appreciate. So thank you very much. And thank you, a number of people over the course of our 120 or so episodes have told me they do enjoy hearing me alone in the car, and I really do like to hear that. So thank you very much. You know, when I first conceived of doing a podcast, this was the format. I didn't think anyone was going to put up with this with me, and I kind of conceived of the structure that has become the bonus episode structure first. Somewhere on some iPhone, there's a practice run of me talking about what the hell was the name of that movie. There's about a 12-minute recording of me in the car alone talking about Gangster Squad. That's the one with Sean Penn. Yeah, that exists somewhere. Maybe we'll release that someday. In any case, before we wrap up, and like I said, this will be a kind of a half hour of power episode. You're all just waiting. Excuse me, still got that cold. You are all just waiting to hear about Star Wars anyway. I know, nobody cares about In the Heart of the Sea. To paraphrase one of my favorite television shows, Sports Night, if you're still listening, please write in and tell me why. That being said, for extra butter this week, as mentioned, I have been watching an unbroken stream of films for days now, and I wanted to take a few minutes to go back and go over some of those to give you a couple of recommendations. Just before In the Heart of the Sea started, I was watching a documentary, and this is available on Netflix. You can stream it right now. It is called Winter on Fire, and it is about the revolution that took place in Ukraine in late 2013 and early 2014. I really got to start reading the paper with more regularity because I kind of knew a lot of what had followed there with Russia's intervention into Ukraine, but I was a lot of the events of that rebellion that was sparked when the former president of Ukraine neglected to join the EU and became an incredibly violent and incredibly harrowing series of events. I really didn't know much of that at all. And this Winter on Fire is a must-see documentary. I compare it oddly enough to the documentary Amy about Amy Winehouse, which is very, very good as well. The reason that Amy was so good was that Amy Winehouse was young enough that the vast majority of her life was on camera. You know, as the world is now, there's cameras everywhere and everything is being filmed and kept and recorded and maintained for posterity. And that's why Amy is the documentary Amy is so good. You really see every moment of her career in that film. And that's great when it's a biography, but when it's history, as is the case in Winter on Fire, because every moment of this revolt, people, you know, 100 people were holding cell phone cameras up to. So you see everything that happened over there in this documentary. It's stunning. It's really, really stunning to see it so vividly. And I said this on Facebook as soon as I finished the film. We are fortunate to live in a time when history is so accessible to us. It's really, really something. And Winter on Fire is probably the best example of that I have seen. That is on Netflix right now. One of my favorite documentaries of the year that I've seen so far. I know I got a bunch yet to watch. Recommend that highly. I said before that I saw Joy. Can't tell you about that one yet. Yesterday I watched 4 films. Another documentary, I bet you this is on your HBO Go or HBO Now, called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets. Kind of the play-by-play on a really upsetting murder trial in Florida that involved the Stand Your Ground law. And if you do follow the news, you'll recognize this case when you start to watch the film. But that is another great documentary. It's a little bit more procedural. A lot of it is just the trial, but fascinating to watch that go down. If you're a documentary fan, there are 2 that I would really say you have to see: 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets, and Winter on Fire. There's a Winter of Fire. I don't know. I got it around here somewhere. You'll find it. Type that into Netflix. It'll pop up. Before that, oh, I watched Macbeth. I watched the Michael Fassbender Macbeth that came out this year. That is a mess. That is just a big, sleepy, moody mess. And I love Macbeth. I've performed in Macbeth. Very small part, trust me. But that was just a very bad treatment of that story. That's a great, great story. In addition, obviously, it's a masterpiece of the theater. It's a great story as well, and they really bungled it, despite a great cast with Fassbender as Macbeth and Marianne Cotillard as Lady Macbeth. They had all the pieces, they just could not put them together. It is like the Game of Thrones theme song stretched out to 2 hours. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I would not watch Macbeth. I don't know where you could. It might be streaming or on demand at this point. I would not waste your time with Macbeth. If you enjoy a music documentary, I did watch the film What Happened, Miss Simone, about Nina Simone. That was very good. That's kind of a straight music biography. Nothing fancy about it. But I didn't know a whole lot about her, so I enjoyed, it was one of those documentaries where you're just learning about a person. And I enjoyed that. Near the top of my list for the year will be a film called Son of Saul. I believe it is Hungary's submission for the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar. That basically means it's Hungary's best picture, the best picture from Hungary in 2015. One of those really tough watches. It is set in Auschwitz. We follow a man who is, he's a Jewish prisoner in Auschwitz, but he's able-bodied, so he's kind of forced to work. And the way that it proceeds is so harrowing that I don't even want to include it here. I don't want to blindside anybody with that. And frankly, I know, you know, a lot of people, I think, play that card where they're like, I don't want to be sad too quickly. This is a case where I think you really have to be comfortable with having a bad time in pursuit of a great work of art to decide that you're going to sit down and watch Son of Saul. If you can, it is absolutely one of the best films of the year. Got a couple good ones left to watch, I know, but, you know, at this moment, that's something that's definitely going to be in my my top 10 for 2015. What was before that? Carol was before that, with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. I'm erring on the side of caution. I don't know if I can comment on that one yet. I'll say it's very good. That counts as a comment, doesn't it? Oh, well. And another great documentary, if you have your Showtime Anytime subscription up and running, Listen to Me, Marlon, about Marlon Brando. This is another amazing thing where recently, recently they discovered that Marlon Brando had hundreds of hours of audio recordings just of him talking to himself and kind of recapping all of this stuff about his life and career, but beyond that, just about his emotional state. So it's this very kind of stream of consciousness, lyrical telling of the life story of Marlon Brando as told by Marlon Brando. Very, very interesting. Even a casual film fan, wow, you gotta watch that. Really a very, very interesting... A very, very interesting way to do somebody's biography. And that's why I really do like this time of year when I'm trying to catch up, because I get to see a lot of documentaries and a lot of indie films that, you know, I don't have the time for or don't kind of cross my plate. Do things cross a plate during the year? And that's why I like doing this. I'm a little exhausted. I think I have about 18 movies I want to watch before Friday afternoon. That's not going to be happening. But, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to be able to do it and to get these movies in the mail and to be able to tell you about them. I'm just about done here. A rating for In the Heart of the Sea, you ask? I can't go higher than a... I have to go to about a 4. It's just not very interesting. It's got a bad lead. It's got a bad story. Only for people who are really, really into whatever sort of thing this is. Once again, I do not have a confirmation of when Aaron and I will be seeing The Force Awakens. I think it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know where it's going to happen. And there's still a chance that it's not going to happen before opening day. So a week from today, you will either find in your podcast feed a full episode about The Force Awakens or an announcement from me about when we will get that content to you. As soon as we can see it and record, you're going to hear it. I just can't tell you exactly when that's going to be. Hopefully next Friday. Again, I really appreciate you listening to the bonus. Well, it's not a bonus episode, is it? It's a Long Lonely Drive episode. I appreciate you listening to me talk to myself. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to You Can't Handle the Truth. And always remember, just stay away from whales. They're fine. Leave them alone.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter
at Sean Collier, PGH,
and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, K-L-E-I-B-E-R. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.